You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Got a whole host of things to get to with Billy Corbin, who's been out for 2 weeks celebrating the single biggest and most popular documentary in the history of Hulu. God Forbid is something that I am urging you to watch if you have not yet seen it. It mixes politics and sex and religion and power in a confluence of creepiness that was in a Miami hotel here as Jerry Falwell Jr. allegedly enjoyed watching his wife have sex with a pool boy. We will get to the celebration of that in a second. We have missed Billy Corbin. The problem that a lot of people have with you, Billy Corbin.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the general smug obnoxiousness of, I need to be right. I want to be right. I want to be right, even if it means my entire city that I love is underwater.
I've never wanted to be wrong so much about anything in my entire life. I'm not betting on this. I don't have any money on this. I'm not on the DraftKings app betting on the flood, you know, and betting on the total destruction of this community. I'm rooting against it every single day. I'm rooting against my own predictions every single day. I'm hoping that by sharing my prognostications, other people will share my views on this and will be like, if nothing else, let's prove Billy wrong. if you hate me that much, prove me wrong. But the problem is you prove me right every single day and every goddamn time. When I say we don't even need climate change and sea level rise, we are going to crumble into the ocean and drown ourselves in our own incompetence and corruption. Prove me wrong. Make me wrong. I would love to be wrong, and I will be the first to say, oh, no, wait. This is competency. Oh, no, wait. This is decency. This is democracy. These are people getting together to do the right thing, to help their neighbors, to help their friends, to help fellow immigrants, to help people of other religions. But that's not what's happening here.
But I believe that some of your message ends up getting contaminated.
I'm not working to destroy this community. I am on the opposite side from the people who are proactively working. When I say working, I mean for profit. I mean, they are literally going to work to make money off of the misery and destruction of this community and proactively harming not only friends and neighbors and family members, but their constituents, the people who actually voted for them and are paying for them to effectively victimize them. I mean, it's an extraordinarily abusive and dysfunctional and toxic relationship and political environment. Believe you me, I want to be wrong.
Billy Gill, what is the video? Because his Twitter account is filled with just an enormous amount of Miami incompetence. What is the video that spurred the question earlier this week of, does Billy Corbin get off on being right that our developments, our garages on the most minor of rain, our new garages and new buildings, because there are cranes all over Miami, are flooding to ruin cars already because we can't withstand.
Honestly, it was like the first thing that we talked about as soon as we walked in after a long Thanksgiving break. And then it was like flooding. And he's like, Billy Corbin put out the video. I'm like, oh, no.
Well, I only really put out one flooding video. Only in Dade. Shout out to Only in Dade. They are there's always these like trends at Only in Dade. For a while, it was like car fires. And it was like Brickell balcony fires.
They lose the trucks into the water, dropping off the boats.
Those are the best. All that qualified captain Black shit. People with the boats on the hitch at the boat ramps. Those are my favorites, too.
Their new thing is people polluting, right? Like throwing bottles into the ocean. They've caught on to that a lot.
Absolutely. And big on king tides and hurricane season flooding and Edgewater, a.k.a. underwater flooding in the city of Miami, and Lambo is just kind of floating down Biscayne Boulevard. So those are the two videos I posted, one of which was Edgewater, I think 23rd Street thereabouts, some new beautiful overpriced condos with underground or literally underwater parking garages with elevators that stop working because they built the elevator machines, or all the elevator closets are in those parking lots. So they flood and then the elevator's on the fritz and nobody can get to their $10 million 40th story apartment. They have to schlep down, you know, all these flights of stairs like the Towering Inferno.
They just think you like being right. And even like being right, even if it means the destruction of everything you care about, that if the only thing standing is you being right at the end that it will be a glorious victory
look,
for
if,
you.
If everything is underwater and everybody dies, then you might as well be right. You know what I mean?
Like, what's the point of being wrong? Florida's going to go blue again is when the flood
What's
comes.
The point of dying and being wrong? Like, if he's going to die, you might as well be right, I guess. Right? I think what I said was, Billy seems always concerned about lots of things going on. He's probably not very fun at a dinner party. Like, everything seems to always be agitating him. You seem to take on a lot, Billy, that you may not be able to directly control.
Oh, but I internalize that mostly. It kills me slowly from the inside. This is sort of my weekly therapy session that enables me to get it off my chest. But at a dinner party, I'm a barrel of laughs, I gotta tell you.
I think we should rename this instead of Because Miami, Killing Me Softly from the Inside, the Billy Corbin story.
Billy's therapy session.
Yeah, I should do this show from a couch, like laying down on a couch. But no, it would give me very little pleasure to stand on the rubble of my home state and this community that I love going, I'm right.
Should we actually do that? We have a couch outside that we call our therapy couch. Should we do the rest of the show with you lying on it?
Yeah, go ahead and go lay out there, and we will get you mic'd up out there on the therapy couch, and we will do it as therapy, and we will figure out how to get the content. We're going to stop now and get everything ready and just lay you down physically.
Put a mic stand over me.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
We have moved the obnoxious, always needs to be right, but also needs to get everything out, Billy Corbin, to the therapy couch, and we will do the rest of the show with him in that position. The first question I want to ask you, as we find yet more evidence that Joe Carollo has been targeting small businesses like Ball and Chain, and we just mentioned Only Indeed as a website, and the Miami Herald did a very poor job and has done a very poor job of covering this story, where you've got a city commissioner manipulating and misusing his power to target local businesses with vengeance, petty bullshit. The question I have for you is, does Only Indeed at this point cover Miami, the city of Miami, better than the Miami Herald?
Oh, I think that's obvious. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. The Miami Herald, in fact, this story that we're talking about now, I should say this development in the Joe Carollo story, has not been covered by the Miami Herald at all. The Miami Herald has simply republished a story that Danny Rivero of WLRN, their quote-unquote news partner, ran, and zero analysis, zero additional reporting, zero commentary, zero work from the reporter that they pay to cover the city of Miami. In any normal major American city with a full press, like we have news affiliates for ABC, NBC, Fox, CBS, we still have the Miami Herald, we still have a lot of local outlets. And this would be, in any normal city, the biggest story and the biggest scandal going. But yet in Miami, everybody, it just sort of seems to be like a day that ends in Y, which is surreal when you consider that all of the shit, I guess this is me standing atop the rubble now. Let me work this out. I'm working this out here on the couch. But like, we have everything we've been talking about this show for the last 2 years, there is now testimony under oath from the former city manager, Emilio Gonzalez, saying that it's all true, that it's all right.
Alleging that they were targeting certain Little Havana businesses like Ball and Chain. Alleging in a federal lawsuit, in federal court, that the city of Miami deployed a deliberate policy of harassing and shutting down a group of bars and restaurants unfairly.
That is correct. Like a communist dictator, Joe Carollo abused his power, exploited and misused the police department. You'll remember the story of the police chief who called out this corruption and got fired because he called out this corruption. You'll remember Art Acevedo, who was the police chief for 6 months. Francis Suarez, Miami Mayor Ponzi Postalita, touted him as the Tom Brady or Michael Jordan of police chiefs. And he said, oh, wow, I found corruption. The corruption I was hired to root out. It's in the city commission. And the city commission fired him for saying that. Now you have a city manager under oath in this explosive $30 million lawsuit claiming that the city, led by Commissioner Joe Carollo, the city attorney who acts like a mob lawyer, Victoria Mendez, who best case scenario should be disbarred. They weaponized the police department and code enforcement to target these business owners and deprive them of their constitutional right to their own private property, shut down their businesses, put people out of work like a dictatorship. I keep saying if anybody would watch a single commission meeting at the city of Miami, no one would ever move here. No one would ever buy a house here. Certainly no one would ever in their right mind open a business here. But the level of corruption that this exposes, it said that the city manager said that in part this was the reason that he was fired. The same reason Art Acevedo was, not for being a whistleblower, but because he refused to go along with this corruption. And it turns out in this bombshell testimony in this federal lawsuit that the city of Miami fought tooth and nail, spending over $1 million and counting in taxpayer dollars on attorney's fees to try to bury and cover up this testimony. He said that he was ordered to target these businesses, but refused to. And he found the conversations so corrupt and shady. He wrote contemporaneous memos with witnesses memorializing these corrupt events and phone conversations with the city attorney, including a hilarious conversation where Victoria Mendez told the city manager, quote, she told me that Commissioner Carollo was visibly upset and that was not good and that I should go to grave lengths to make them happy. The Spanish version is pasar la mano, which is like a stroke. Pasar la mano, she said, make them happy. I said, there's nothing to make happy about. If I'm called to testify, I'll testify, give the truth. And she said, pasar la mano. What does pasar la mano mean?
To kind of pet or pass the hand is the literal translation.
Right. Do corrupt shit is what it means in Miami, right? I mean, that's basically.
Well, I mean, Miami is redundant when it comes to corrupt shit. Is there more interesting stuff from this story? Because I've got more corruption and shady to get to from a story done by the Financial Times, too.
Oh, I mean, listen, like I said, this is now under oath testimony from a former city manager confirming all of this corruption. Where is the FBI? Where is the state attorney? We know there's a criminal investigation happening in Broward County right now. This is absolutely flies in the face of everything that Francis Suarez lies about the city of Miami. Everybody that talks about this being a business-friendly environment with a functional government that's pro-business is a total and absolute lie. First, you had a city police chief who referred to this government as a mafia, and it turns out he was absolutely right. And the layers of this onion here, you have to remember, we talked about on this show how Joe Carollo made a deal with other city commissioners and then the mayor, who didn't veto this, to destroy West Grove, to gerrymander the West Grove, destroying the power of the black vote in the oldest neighborhood in Miami, to gerrymander his house into his district so that he wouldn't lose it in this court case, in this civil litigation, because these plaintiffs are going to win and the city of Miami taxpayers are going to be on the hook for tens of millions of dollars because of the corruption of a man who first was arrested for domestic violence, for beating his wife and terrorizing his young daughters who called 911 to yell, my dad's hurting my mom. And now he is still, decades later, abusing the taxpayers of the city of Miami.
We will get to this Financial Times story, but I think now would be a good time to play the song. What is the name of the song we're about to play here in honor of Joe Carollo?
It's to the tune of the Bee Gees' Night Fever. It's called Wife Beater.
And here it is.
I can hardly stand the sound of that snotty old clown. You've been a scourge upon this town, but we can't shake. All throughout District 3, in the
Through a teapot? Is that what it...
Yeah, but I take exception to that. It was a terracotta-colored cardboard tea box that left a golf ball-sized welt on her face while their young daughters screamed for help. Now he is running the entire city of Miami. He is the de facto strong mayor. He's the de facto police chief, the city manager, code enforcement. He is in charge of the entire city while Francis Suarez goes and gets his eyebrows done and pumps and dumps shitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And that is what the city of Miami really is, if anybody cares to actually pay attention to anything other than press releases and not pay attention to the Miami Herald, because they would tell you that, you know, everything's good. Pasar la mano.
Speaking of cryptocurrencies, our nightclubs miss them, according to the Financial Times.
Yeah. So the story is, oh, the headline. I didn't write it, I swear. Miami nightclubs mourn absence of high-rolling crypto entrepreneurs. So
it reads like The Onion. You couldn't, in fiction, come up with a funnier headline off the back of what's happened to the crypto industry.
And of course, we're, you know, the crypto cowboys came here because the mayor of Miami, mayor of Miami-Dade, the mayor of Miami Beach.
Tech Hub, bro.
They put a for sale sign in front of the city hall and basically said, like, come here. And we became this quote unquote crypto hub. But really what was happening is people were looking for an environment that was sufficiently permissive to allow Ponzi schemes to flourish. Listen, Ponzi schemer is going to Ponzi scheme. That's we accept that. But should the government be a party to it, a co-conspirator to it, a promoter of a Ponzi scheme, I would say no. Miami would say, bring it on, bro. And certainly the trickle-down economics, I always say the only real-world successful case study of trickle-down economics was Miami and the cocaine boom of the late 70s and early 1980s. And that's true now. We always benefit from trickle-down economics because easy come, easy go. When you have scammers and schemers who gravitate toward Miami, they invariably spend their money in this town. And so what you had was a place like 11, which is not a strip club, by the way. It's a cabaret, right? They started accepting cryptocurrencies last year in their nightclub to pre-buy condos in their building. They announced at some point that they were going to launch their own cryptocurrency. I don't know if they did. I presume it was going to be called Coinalingus. But they they started accepting cryptocurrency. And last year, in 2021, their crypto wallet rang on average $660,000 per month in crypto transactions last year. So over $7 million they made at that one nightclub in crypto transactions. Now, in the last several months, they're doing about $3,000 a month in crypto, a 99.5% drop in crypto revenue at
Let me read an excerpt. It was the spring of 2021 and Miami's hottest nightclubs were inundated with phone calls from cryptocurrency entrepreneurs that no one had ever heard of. They wanted to reserve lots of tables or rent an entire venue for a whole evening at a cost of $500,000 or more. With the price of Bitcoin then at $60,000 and crypto becoming mainstream, its biggest beneficiaries descended on the Florida city to flaunt their wealth at lavish parties. Quote, out of the blue, all these kids from crypto started coming down and spending a lot of money, like an insane amount of money, said Andrea Vemercati, director of food and beverage at Moxie Hotel Group. They were booking tables for $50,000, and it was like, who the hell are these people? The new partygoers were 95% men, young, with a kind of nerdy style. He said you couldn't tell they had a lot of money if they were just walking around. And
God, I wish there were documentary cameras or something rolling on this. I would just love to see the scenes.
Grand opening, grand closing. What can I tell you? I will tell you that Francis Suarez is still claiming that he takes his mayoral paycheck in Bitcoin, which is a lie, by the way. The city can only give it to him in U.S. dollars, but he claims he's converting it or buying Bitcoin with that. But it's only one of several revenue streams that he has, because he's allowed under insane corrupt city of Miami laws to maintain several jobs in the private sector in which he services people, so to speak, in real estate, in crypto, blockchain, where these are his private clients that he doesn't disclose who they are, but actually goes to work for them every single day to the detriment of the residents, his constituents in one of the poorest cities in the United States. And the truth is that according to his financial disclosures, despite this big talk about all of his crypto stuff, according to his financial disclosures, the most recent ones that we have, he had only about $10,761 in his cryptocurrency account last year, with $840,000 cash in U.S. dollars and $700,000 in real estate investments. So even he knows, he's nothing but a lot of talk and a pair of eyebrows, this guy. Even he knows, you know, which side the tostada is buttered on. He's a poser, he's a pretender, and he's really just in U.S. dollars and real estate, which is where everybody with any sense is right now in Miami. And even Bloomberg, by the way, in an article where they were mostly complimentary about Miami being open to the crypto business last week, they specifically said, if you want a sense of how far crypto sentiment has fallen, look no further than Miami, which has aspired to be the capital of digital money. Gone are the laser eyes from Mayor Francis Suarez's Twitter profile, the FTX sponsorship deal for the Miami Heat's basketball stadium, and the pie-in-the-sky dream of helping fund local government with altcoin proceeds instead of taxes. You remember Francis Suarez says Miami coin proceeds and dividends would be passed out or divided amongst the residents of Miami, and they would replace taxes and fees that the citizens would ordinarily have to pay. But what they specifically said was that they called out Francis for his, quote, relentless shilling, end quote, of shitcoin, saying he, quote, acted recklessly in his decision to associate himself with a highly speculative Miami coin. You wouldn't expect a government official to use his position of influence to push specific stocks or bonds on voters, and crypto always felt equally inappropriate. That's Bloomberg on Mayor Ponzi Postalita.
Another story that I wanted to get to with you, because I am Cuban and I didn't understand, perhaps you can explain it to me, the objection to the book, Cuban Privilege, The Making of Immigrant Inequality in America. You've heard me talk before here about wet foot, dry foot, and the fact that when Cubans get to this country, they get to stay here. And it is not something that is offered to, say, Haitians who boat away from desperation. They do not get to stay here. So there has been Cuban privilege. Why is Miami-Dade Commissioner Kevin Cabrera trying to censor a book reading of this book?
So where to begin with this one? I mean, first of all, the story of the so-called golden exile or Cuban exceptionalism is very well documented. The story of Cuban Americans in Miami is the greatest immigrant success story in history. In no small part, though, because our laws granted special status to Cuban immigrants for decades, which gave them a leg up. And so there is a new book. Again, this is not a new concept. This is a pretty old concept. And Fabiola Santiago, I never thought I'd see the day when I would say this, the like kind of lone voice of reason,
the columnist for the Miami Herald.
Yeah, she's been on a real roll the past like several years and had a fabulous column on this subject, the headline of which, Trump-endorsed Miami-Dade commissioner has no business trying to censor book readings. So the Cuban Research Institute at FIU, which happens to be Kevin Cabrera's alma mater, is hosting the author of Cuban Privilege, The Making of Immigrant Inequality in America. The author's position, by the way, is not that Cubans should not have any kind of special privileges as immigrants, but that those special privileges should be granted and shared amongst all immigrants who are fleeing tyranny, whether it's in Haiti, whether it's in Central or South America, and long for the freedom and opportunity of the United States. But of course, you have this lawmaker, Jesus, I'm remiss to say that, newly elected, Trump-endorsed Proud Boy. We've been talking about the Proud Boy infiltration of the local Miami-Dade Democrats, about the Proud Boy infiltration of the school board.
How many now? How many is it? What is the number of a white supremacist group? I think it was six last time we talked. I don't know if it's increased since then.
Well, they come and go. They claim to resign. They claim to be former Proud Boys. They claim to have nothing to do with the Proud Boys. But you have over half a dozen Proud Boys and former Proud Boys, hate group members who are on the executive committee of the local Republican Party. And now you have them in office, whether it's on the school board or Kevin Cabrera, who in 2018, along with this hate group, the Proud Boys, conducted a violent demonstration while then Congresswoman Donna Shalala was meeting with Nancy Pelosi in Coral Gables.
Look at Nancy Pelosi right here. Look at this piece of shit right here. Look at this piece of shit, Pelosi, right here. F***ing communists. You don't belong here, you f***ing communists. Get the f*** out of here. Get the f*** out of here. F*** you and your f***ing Democrats. Afuera. Open up. There's the Proud Boys in here.
This was such a disgusting display that even Marco Rubio condemned it. But Kevin Cabrera was able to use this violence and this right-wing extremism, of course, to get into office in the Miami-Dade County Commission. And his first act as county commissioner is to release a statement basically saying he wants to burn books and ban books, and said that a book that he hasn't read is inflammatory, hate-filled, and anti-Cuban, even though he hasn't read it. And of course, Cuban-American columnist Fabiola Santiago calls bullshit in her latest column, and more interestingly, says that it's disgusting that he should cite in his press release how many residents he has and constituents in his district who suffered and were imprisoned in Castro's gulags when he himself is embracing that style of communist censorship and attempting to really attract negative attention and possibly even violent attention if his record of extremism and violent protest is any indication. But the reality is that this event's going on. It's happening at Books and Books in Coral Gables, a wonderful and legendary bookstore here in Miami, and FIU's sponsoring it. It's happening at Books and Books in Coral Gables on December 9th, presented by Florida International University's Cuban Research Institute. And I want to leave you with the words of Fabiola Santiago, because I think she said it best on this subject. As for our reputation as a community, neither academics like the author of this book nor journalists reporting facts are ruining it. Extremists like Cabrera and their gullible, fanatical base are the ones constantly displaying deplorable behaviors. Their lack of respect for democratic values, such as academic freedom, are writing ugly chapters of Cuban-American history in Miami.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Whittingham, how do you feel about the county commission handing the Miami Dolphins $15 million or more in stadium subsidy for the 2026 World Cup? You and Billy Corbin have argued, Mike Ryan and Billy Corbin have argued about building a, you know, Jorge Mas on Melrose golf property.
Whitty has sent me to this couch. Like I sent David Sampson to his therapist couch on this subject, Whitty has sent me to this couch on this subject.
Yes, and it allows you to scream from your couch. You let it all out, and then you can carry on with your week. I honestly don't know why this was necessary, because the deal, if you read it, is basically on top of their current arrangement for the Miami Dolphins to host big events. It's a $4 million carve-out for Formula One and $4.5 million for the Super Bowl and $3 million for college bowl games. So they added another $15 million on top of that to pay out for Miami to host the World Cup. I believe it'll be something in the neighborhood of six World Cup matches. So it's not even like an extraordinary number of events. We don't know how far in the competition. So I don't really know. The one thing, and it's sort of been one of the backdrops of the current World Cup that's going on, is that normally when World Cups happen in a place, FIFA absorbs that place and their governments, which is why it's been so funny and strange that Qatar continues to give them middle fingers because they are running the show, given how much money they have paid for this. But I don't know sort of the conditions upon which local governments who are involved in the bidding process to be a host city for the World Cup just have to fork over money.
I imagine Billy Corbin is enraged by this. Look at him shaking his head on that therapy couch.
Daniela Levine-Cava is a sports welfare queen, is what she is. She's never met a subsidy for a billionaire that she didn't love. And in fact, she secretly negotiated this deal to give billionaire Stephen Ross another $20+ million of our money to host events that are already booked at Hard Rock Stadium. And she secretly negotiated this. It was brought in by Commissioner DUI, former Commissioner DUI, Pepe Diaz, who was finally termed out. And he added it in the middle of the night to the agenda. And then it passed with unanimous support with zero discussion from any of the commissioners or any of the public who didn't even know it was on the agenda because it was deliberately put on in the last minute in the middle of the night. These folks don't work for us. They work for Stephen Ross. They work for the oligarchs of Miami. We have real problems in this community. Lack of affordable housing, deteriorating infrastructure, collapsing buildings. We have dirty water. We have relentless, unfettered development that is destroying our natural resources. And the best they can come up with is sports welfare for a billionaire. This is what our government goes to work every day to do, goes to work for millionaire and billionaire developers and sports team owners, and everyone else is left in the lurch because they're doing this shit practically in secret up there. And it's deplorable to me in no small part because Daniela Levine-Cava pretended to be somebody else. She pretended to care about these issues, and instead she has just been as bad as Francis Suarez and Carlos Jimenez and everybody else. What people are willing to do for sports is nothing short of repugnant. And Witty is right. Look no further than the World Cup. What people are willing to overlook, how they're willing to compromise their morality, their integrity, their ethics, their values, their standards. They're willing to embrace anti-Semites and homophobes, misogynists. I wonder if they're gonna, if the police are gonna beat the shit out of people wearing love t-shirts when the World Cup is here in Miami. I wouldn't be surprised, and no one's gonna say shit about it because it's the beautiful game. Get the fuck out of here.
Okay, it's an enraged Billy Corbin. If that one didn't enrage you enough, how about this one?
A sport, mind you, that ends in a 0-0 match? That's right. The sport?
We don't need your sports critique over here. That is not welcome. You can have all of your gasbaggery and outrage everywhere
else. 0-0? That's a sport, Dan?
That is correct. 0-0 is a sport.
A beautiful sport.
The beautiful game, even.
It's cheaper than Ambien, I'll give you that.
This by Scott Pelley of 60 Minutes. This is not an isolated story. Forgotten black cemeteries uncovered in Florida. This is something out of the movie Poltergeist. No one can say when human remains began surfacing in Clearwater, Florida. There was the pipeline crew that churned up bones in a trench. Later, remains of the dead were found at an elementary school, a swimming pool, and an office building. It seemed like a curse for what had been done in the name of progress and greed in the old segregated South. The truth of what happened in the 40s and 50s was meant to stay buried, but in a neighborhood called Clearwater Heights, residents with long memories recognized a grave injustice. That's good wordplay there. Grave injustice. In the first half of the 20th century, Clearwater Heights was a black neighborhood, thriving, proud, and anchored by faith. Billy, how much cemetery building are we developing on?
Oh, most of it. I mean, Florida is basically developed on top of the graves of lost, forgotten, ancient, disrespected, raped civilizations. I mean, you look at the Dozier School for Boys. That was an extraordinarily disturbing story. In its 111-year history, it was notorious for abuse and rapes and beatings and murders. It was the University of South Florida that discovered 55 like unmarked graves and documented over 100 young boys who clearly were murdered and forgotten and buried there on that property. All the time here in Miami, you know, we find literally the remnants of ancient civilizations, the Tequesta natives who settled along the shore of along the Miami River, downtown Miami, all the time, were discovering, whether it's graveyards or extraordinary artifacts and tools and remnants of these ancient civilizations. There's a famous, you know, Miami Circle right there at the mouth of the Miami River as it opens up from Brickell to the bay. And that is a lot of Florida history. I mean, Florida was, I mean, we were, I think per capita, the lynching capital of the United States pre-civil rights era. And so there is a lot of tragedy and a lot of history that has been buried and forgotten and literally paved over.
Before we let you go here, I just wanted to get into a back and forth you had with Hall of Fame safety Ed Reed of the University of Miami, who came to the defense of Kyrie Irving with the tweet, "These boys making business decisions, not worried about the people. I stand with hashtag Kyrie Irving. We are harmed every day. Stop acting as if black folk are not treated worse than any."
What did I say?
Your response was, "I thought it couldn't get any lower for us Canes after last night's loss, but here we are. Nobody is diminishing the black struggle, especially not Jews who have been staunch allies in the civil rights movement. The issue is his perpetuation of anti-Semitism and Holocaust denial."
That first sentence about couldn't get any lower for the Canes after last night's loss is an evergreen tweet, huh? I'm not even sure which week that was referring to. So here's what I'd like to say about that. It's really stupid for black people and Jewish people to argue about anything ever. We have always marched shoulder to shoulder in solidarity on virtually every single issue. Jewish people were not born on third base. Historically, like people of color, the most oppressed in the history of man and woman and child. And so Jewish people, by our nature, find kindred spirits in oppressed peoples, of which black people of this country and of the world have been. And so when you look at the front lines of civil rights history, also in the arts, like, there's always Jewish people collaborating with black people. And I think Jews have had an advantage in that we are light-skinned and can sometimes pass, you know, as Gentiles. There's no question about that. But the reality is that I think the idea is to always help to uplift other oppressed peoples whenever we possibly can. And more importantly, if you want to look at a plot or a conspiracy or who's trying to mess with who or who's trying to oppress who does it benefit to have Jewish people and black people fighting? To paraphrase the fictitious Senator J. Billington Bulworth, who I think said it best, rich people have always stayed on top by dividing white people from black people. But white people got more in common with black people than they do with rich people. And so I don't want to fight with or argue with Ed Reed. Nobody disagrees that black people are oppressed and have been traditionally oppressed and deserve attention for that. But I don't think there's any need to belittle the plight of Jewish people or diminish the recent amplification of anti-Semitism. We have not only seen the former president of the United States, before he was president of the United States and when he was president of the United States, Donald Trump embracing white supremacists and neo-Nazis, as he always has. By the way, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has done exactly the same thing. He's little Trump. He's always played by Trump's playbook. So the idea that he's somehow a palatable alternative to Trump is science fiction, because this guy has embraced white supremacists and neo-Nazis. When you see swastikas and flags using four maps of Florida to form a swastika alongside DeSantis country flags, and Ron DeSantis has nothing to say about that. Why? Because he doesn't want to condemn his base. And it's the same thing as Donald Trump. And I think that's the focus. It's not worrying about, it's worrying about the leaders. These are the leaders. These are the two men who are polling 1 and 2 to get the nomination for the Republican Party for president in 2024. This is one of only two political parties we have in this, major political parties in power in this country. The fact that they are effectively white supremacists and neo-Nazis. And I say effectively because there's a saying in Germany, as my friend David Sipkin, whose family was killed in the Holocaust and grandmother was a Auschwitz survivor, says, they have a saying in Germany that goes, if you see 10 people at a table having dinner with a Nazi, you're watching 11 Nazis having dinner. So when you see Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis embrace, not only fail to condemn, but embrace white supremacists, hate groups, and neo-Nazis, and anti-Semites, and misogynists, and homophobes as their base, that means that they themselves, that is what they are, that is who they are, and believe them when they tell us who they are.
On a lighter note, as we get out of here, congratulations on your documentary. It was a monster success. It is a monster success. What are the highlights from God Forbid and Hulu saying publicly that they've never had a documentary do so well? They've never had a movie of any kind do so well.
A documentary, yeah, where the where they say the most watched doc in Hulu history. A young history, but I'm pretty flattered nonetheless that people watched it, embraced it. The word of mouth has been really outstanding. So other people are telling other people to watch it. You, of course, Dan, thank you, have said so many nice things about it. I heard the show debate it the week that it came out, and it was a really interesting conversation. I always say that's the best documentaries are just the beginning of a conversation. So I think it's elicited a lot of compelling and sometimes fun and funny and sometimes kind of dark and disturbing conversations about the state of our nation and the state of Christian nationalism and Christofascism, not really very different from what we were just talking about with Trump and DeSantis. And apparently it's still performing well. People are still rewatching it and encouraging other people to watch it. And Woody, did you see it?
No, I've not had the chance. Jessica was talking about it in the kitchen with you, but yeah, I've not unfortunately had the chance yet during the aforementioned morally corrupt, morally bankrupt event, the World Cup. Yeah. I have difficulty finding time to watch things.
Well, you know, if you just watch when they score, it's very little time you'd need to spend watching. So if you just want to watch men on a green treadmill run
nobody
back and
wants
forth,
to hear your sports analysis. Say goodbye to the people, Billy.
I got
to
tell you, I've sat on this couch for the last hour, and I'm not feeling any better.
Okay, okay, and neither are we. We don't need to hear you talk about how soccer often ends in a 0-0 tie. Thank
that
you.
Often.
Cocaines.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm gonna go out there, I'm gonna crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.